Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Live Dharma Sunday. If you have called in to listen to this morning's broadcast, please note that all lines have been placed on mute to avoid background interference. If you are joining us from either the Bright Dawn Ning site or the Blog Talk Radio site, please note that it is not necessary to call in. If you are experiencing loss of audio or the Blog Talk Radio player is not working properly, please refresh your page and hit the play button once more. It may take a few moments for your browser to complete the buffering process. Once again, welcome to Live Dharma Sunday and enjoy the broadcast.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Live Dharma Sunday on this first Sunday of August. Today we have Lay Minister John Neo Sensei giving the Dharma Glimpse. He is one of the first lay minister inductees that we had, belonging to our so-called LM1 group, and always has insightful Dharma glimpses to share. John, please.
Thank you. I've decided I don't like August. This August started on the morning of the 1st with my wife and me finding a friend's suicide note on Facebook. We called the police only to find someone else had found it first and he'd already been taken for psychiatric evaluation. But my real dislike of August started last year, when shortly before her 15th birthday, my daughter woke up one morning short of breath, feeling like she'd just run a marathon. Well, not that she'd ever run a marathon. She is my daughter, after all. We took her to the emergency room, where the admitting physician tried to determine which illegal drugs she'd been taking. She is a teenager, after all. Her urine test came back testing positive for blood clots, not crack. And the chest scan showed her lungs were full of them. Decatur, Illinois doesn't have an pediatric intensive care unit, or PICU, so she got an ambulance ride into Springfield, which does. At least she didn't get the helicopter ride into Springfield. She spent almost a week in PICU. The blood clots finally dissolved somewhat and showed signs of further disintegration. And she was finally released from the hospital the day before her 16th birthday with new knowledge of her genetic disorder and worries about what to look for and what could happen without warning someday if. A couple of weeks later, a friend of hers, not a close friend, but someone she knew from school and volunteer activities, had a fight with her parents, shut herself in a room, and hanged herself with a belt. She was still breathing when her parents got her down and rushed her to the emergency room. She did get the helicopter ride into Springfield, and it was kind of eerie for all of us when we realized she died in the exact same hospital bed our daughter had been in just a few days before. So over the past year, I've been doing a lot of thinking about death. But not really so much about what it means to die, but what it means to live or to have lived or not to have. Because now, knowing she has this genetic disorder, my wife and I, you know, do we let our daughter do all the things we used to let her do, knowing there's a heightened chance she might die, or do we keep her in a plastic bubble so that she might not? Okay, step inside my head for a minute. I work at a public library, and we joke about Dawn of the Dead sometimes, watching our patrons shuffle into the computers as soon as we open the doors in the morning so they can spend the day on Facebook and YouTube. It's hard not to feel you're watching the undead going through a purposeless mockery of life, watching them connect to the internet for the day. And it's hard not to start worrying that you're unliving your own life in the same way and just don't see it as you get up each morning, stumble through your morning coffee and routines, your job, your own hours in front of a computer or TV screen. But then you tell yourself you're not walking through a meaningless and empty mockery of life. After all, I've got tickets for the midnight showing of The Dark Knight Rises. That's different. But then I've got other patrons who come in many cases every day, with great drive and purpose and focus and singleness of mind that is admirable and awe-inspiring before it gets scary. In the 19th century, they used to call it monomania, and the prime example was Captain Ahab and his hunt for Moby Dick. The empty life someone tries to fill with one all-encompassing ideal. In our case, usually these patrons are genealogists, spending hours and hours each day creating lists of dead relatives. But as the lists get longer, I can't see any improvement in their lives, any added spring in their step, any added joy in their life, any added light in their eye. But I also see myself doing the same thing, getting obsessed with meaningless deadwood that doesn't improve my life just because I'm supposed to do it. And I hereby publicly admit and vow that I don't even like Battlestar Galactica. And I hereby surrender the Greek cred and vow I will never watch that bloody show again. But I'm also surrounded by a third set of patrons and co-workers that's highly praised by society and is related to the monomaniac, although broader natured. These are adrenaline junkies and high achievers. For instance, a 63-year-old co-worker of mine is currently emotionally devastated this summer because he can't compete in the triathlon because he crashed his motorcycle and broke his ankle. He's also a member of the local bicycle club that I considered joining once, and my daughter and I went to one of their rides from city park down to a country park, basically down a bicycle path. And the club members may have ridden down there and back 3 or 4 times before my daughter and I did, but, I'm sure they didn't see the flaw in eating the clover back in the woods or see the catfish in the shade under the bridge. And many people I know have passed me by in their careers as well, and sometimes I do get jealous and wonder if I'm just rationalizing being lazy and a bum. And at those times, I usually just fix myself a Caucasian and go bowling. So, I've been spending a lot of time this year thinking about what it means to live, to truly live. And, I think living truly is much more complicated than any of that, and at the same time much simpler, and I don't have any idea what it means at all. But after a year of thinking about it hard, I do suspect that it does require me to stop thinking about it at all and overanalyzing it. And I'm going to believe that somehow, whatever it means, living truly entails living quietly enough to hear the call of Amida Buddha and to heed that call, whatever it is in your life or mine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So true, so true. Reverend Coyle is on a speaking tour in Hawaii today, but he's recorded a Dharma message before he left, and I'm going to start it up right now.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about Hawaii today. It's such a great subculture in Hawaii. The aloha spirit is something very special, and I've been fortunate enough to live in Hawaii for half a year. When I was teaching at the University of Hawaii in a little visiting position, this was in the 70s, and then maybe three, four times taking trips over there. Again, I was fortunate to participate in speaking panels and got to know the people there. Enjoy the tremendous cuisine, such creative fusion cuisine. So I experienced the aloha spirit firsthand. And I'm sure I haven't researched it out or anything, but, you know, aloha, one aspect of it is appreciating everybody. You know, the uniqueness of individuals. It's a very, more than tolerant spirit. It's a very open, warm. Now, perhaps you might think that since Hawaii depends upon tourism as a major source of, you know, income in their economy, that's why they're friendly to visitors. But be that as it may, it sort of endorses the a human value of recognizing the absolute value of individuals. And somehow I feel that that should be not taken for granted. We should take a message from this. And you know how I was thinking also something unique to Hawaii is the particular hand gesture that they use. And before talking about that, I was just thinking about hand gestures in general and how important and powerful they are. You know, we shake hands, we meet people, stranger, hey, offer your hand. Now, I suppose it has been said that you offer your hand because you don't have a weapon. You know, it's a sign of friendliness. You put your hand out and you don't have a weapon. In your right hand, your dominant hand, and you shake hands. But, of course, it's a social gesture now, but putting your hand out or waving. Or, of course, gassho. You know, and there are negative hand gestures, too. But schools, like, and sports teams, they have the slogans or certain hand gestures that they use to cheer on their team. It's a form of expression and also of communication between other people. The beauty of gassho is, as within the South Asian culture, it's a social gesture, just like shaking hands in the West, where people would come and they would bow, put their hands together in front of their heart and bow to each other as a form of greeting. Okay. And of course, I always joke and say, hey, it's better. Yeah, showing each other is better than shaking hands. You know, you don't spread germs. But the gassho gesture is a sign of respect, and it's respecting the best that is in the other person. When someone God shows to you, you're reminded, hey, I have something special in me that is beyond me and that I should live up to. And you're reminding each other when you gush out to each other. Okay. You are helping each other. Okay. Well, there's a Hawaiian gesture called the shaka. Shaka is a word that, again, I don't know all the nuances of it, but it's a good word, shaka. It just means good, I guess. So you could say shaka, but a nonverbal expression of it is a hand gesture of sticking your thumb out and your little finger out, okay, and then you shake it a little bit. That's the shaka gesture. And any Hawaiian or people that are familiar with the culture, you know, you can just do that nonverbal shaka gesture and boom, there's communication. And it expresses it up, you know, affirmation. One, you know, you say, hey, you could do this to yourself, not only as kind of a greeting or say, hey, everything's okay. Everything's cool, man. Shaka, baby. But one could use this just like one could use gusho, and not just as a greeting, interpersonal communication, but anytime during the day to remind ourselves of the kind of values we want to affirm and endorse in our own life, where we see everybody and all things as worthy of respect and our gratitude and our joy in being alive. And, so all this is wrapped up, say, in the aloha spirit, in shaka gesture. In all kinds of contexts, we have all these kind of gestures, and we should raise our consciousness about their impact and utilize them more in our spiritual practice. So, that's all for today's broadcast, and I wish everyone a very beautiful Aloha Shaka Day. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. This concludes today's Live Dharma Sunday. And until next time, have a great week. Bye-bye.